This is episode 81 of the Sugar Mamas podcast, and we are still chugging along in our Think Like a Pancreas book club series. Today, we're going over chapter 9, which is called Taming the Highs and Lows. My amazing guest today has not only been living with type 1 diabetes for several years, but she is also the mom of a little girl living with type 1. In other words, she has a lot of insight and wisdom to share with us. I love this chapter, another great chapter that's going to talk all about how to prevent lows and highs before they become a major problem. As always, you can check out the show notes to find a link to where you can buy your very own copy of Think Like a Pancreas and follow along with us. All right, without further ado, let's get started. You're listening to the Sugar Mamas Podcast, a show designed for moms and caregivers of type 1 diabetics. Here you'll find a community of like-minded people who are striving daily to keep their kids safe, happy, and healthy in the ever-changing world of type 1. I'm your host and fellow T1D mom, Katie Roseborough. Enjoy! Before we get started, I need you to know that nothing you hear on the Sugar Mamas podcast should be considered medical advice. Please be safe, be smart, and always consult your physician before making changes to the way you manage type 1 diabetes. Thanks. All right, everybody, I am here with Samantha today, and Samantha and I are going to be going over Chapter 9 of Think Like a Pancreas, and Chapter 9 is called Taming the Highs and Lows. So this chapter is all about, it has a really big focus on preventing low blood sugar, because those are just not good and are the most dangerous. But then also the second half of the chapter talks about preventing high blood sugars and after meal spikes. So this is another great, really practical chapter, in my opinion. But before we get started, Samantha, I would love it if you would introduce yourself and just tell the listeners how you are connected to the world of type 1 diabetes.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sam. I am located all the way across the country here in Pennsylvania. I have been a type 1 diabetic since I was 11, discovered by my mom. We have a whole mess of diabetics in the family, and my grandmother was sitting at the table and noticed me like chug a glass of water, which I'm told was abnormal. I was like a soda girl, I guess. And I don't remember it whatsoever, but they checked my blood sugar like on the spot. And my mom tells me correctly, 460, something like that. So I was actually diagnosed with diabetes the day after the 9/11 attack. So I was in a hospital bed with the news being just awful. It was just, so September 12th was my day. But it was just awful. But yeah, so I've been diabetic now for about 21 years. And then I also have a 9-year-old daughter who has been type 1 for the past 2 years.
I just have to know, like, as you've obviously been living with diabetes for a while now, which it's, first of all, it's crazy to think that 9/11 happened that long ago. But anyway.
I know. Madness.
I know. But so how is it like living with type 1 and then having a daughter that is diagnosed with diabetes? Like, is there any part of you that's like, okay, we got this? Or just as a parent, are you still just freaking out? Like, what, just take me through the emotions of that whole scenario.
So for me, diabetes is like, eventually, I always like to say, to tell people that either just got diagnosed or their kids got diagnosed, like eventually it's just such a part of you that it's just something you have to do every day. It's not something that you dread or you're annoyed with or it's whatever. It's just something you do. So I get a little like, I want to use the word like frustrated when I see some posts like from different diabetic communities that are like, they really come down hard on themselves because, and they're newly diagnosed. And it's like, man, you just want to be like, it gets easier. You know what I mean? Like, you just want to be like, at first, it's so frustrating for you to have it. And then eventually it's just, you just do it. Like, you just have to carry on. Like, there's no one at the end of the day, if you have a breakdown and you're like, do you know what? I can't do this. No one else is going to save you but yourself with diabetes. Like, you gotta just keep on keeping on scenario. So it's like, oh gosh, you had the moment of frustration, like let yourself be annoyed that you were super low or super high, but like, it has to be something that you think about every day, but doesn't consume you every day. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I mean, I don't have type 1, but I just, as the caregiver of one, I just feel like the longer time goes on too, you really do have to adopt a little bit of an attitude of like, whatever, man. I mean, that's not to say that we're like being reckless and just, I mean, obviously we want to manage my daughter's diabetes as well as we possibly can, but it's just, as you know, diabetes just doesn't always play by the rules and
never
just forget things. Like sometimes you just forget to pre-bolus or you didn't, you screwed up the carb count or whatever it is. Yeah. And now you're at 300 and it's just like, you just have to learn to be like, whatever, like we're going to get through it. We're going to get the number down and tomorrow's another day. Like you really,
Exactly how I feel with Amelia. Like, you know what? Like it was a crappy day. I totally get it. But at the same time, like you're going to be fine. Like you were super low. Oh man, take a nap. We'll come back for the day after that. You're super high. Let's get your blood sugar down. Let's like go for a jog together. Like it's just something you have to do. While it's frustrating for everyone involved, at the same time, you like can't let it ruin your life. So it's like, gotta learn how to just figure it out day by day.
And just move on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that insight. And okay, so I'm sorry, your daughter was diagnosed when she was 2. How old is she now?
That was when she was 7. That was like August of 2020.
Okay. I'm sorry. You said 2 years ago. I thought.
Oh, yeah.
I thought you said when she was 2. Okay. Got it. Okay. So yeah. Oh, all right. Well, my daughter was diagnosed right around the same time as your daughter because my daughter was diagnosed in August of 2020. So, man, you had like the two world tragedies. Like you were diagnosed the day after 9/11 and then your daughter is diagnosed in the middle of a pandemic.
Exactly.
No more.
A mess.
A mess for sure. Oh, that was not fun. Still not fun, but. Okay. So real quick, before we jump into the chapter, I'm just curious, would you share with listeners like what you guys use in terms of like, are you doing MDI? Are you doing pumps? What are y'all on?
Yeah. So I was on the Tandem T-Slim for the longest time. That kept me the best in control while we were attempting IVF with my now son who's here. Mm-hmm. But I'm MDI now because after he was born, long story short, I didn't need insulin for like a month. So I was like, oh my gosh. I just took everything off. I'm like, you know what? We're just going to like hold insulin until I can figure out what I need. So I'm MDI, Lannis, and no vlog for now. And Amelia is a podder. She just got the 5.
Okay. Oh, that's very exciting. We are also podders. We are actually on the classic, the Aeros system at the moment.
Oh my gosh.
And now we just got approval for both the Dash and the Omnipod 5, like officially letters in the mail, which is great. But I don't know. I'm like hesitant to switch to 5 just because we're doing DIY loop now, which, you know, is another automated system. And I don't know. I can't decide if I want to. I actually emailed the endocrinologist this morning and I was like, this is just like a general question. Like, can we flip flop? Because like right now, you know, like, can you write us a prescription for the 5? But like 2-3 months from now, if we don't like it, can we try the Dash? And I don't know. I just wanted to feel her out for it. Like, if you're approved for everything, like if you can get coverage, is that really that big of a deal to just.
So for the 5, this is probably good info for you to have. We have the Dash. But the 5, you can do automated or manual. So doing it manual is just like the Dash.
Okay.
So that's honestly what we have Amelia on because I don't know about you. I'm a little bit of a control freak with Amelia's diabetes. Like, I want to know that the insulin she needed, I gave to her. Or if, gosh forbid, she would go low, like I was the reason, not like her pump malfunctioning or, you know. So I'm having a little bit of a control problem with automated system, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, no, I'm the same exact way. When we switched to the DIY loop, our control. Yeah, I think we honestly had better control when we weren't on the automated system. It's getting better. I mean, I think we're getting to where it's like the same as it was before, but man, it's taken us several months to get there or a few months. But yeah, I'm also a control freak. So, and the author of this book says that in the little section that he writes about the automated systems, he's like, if you already have really good control of your diabetes, like these systems might really frustrate you. So, and I was like raising my hand. Okay. That's good to know that the manual mode is basically the same as Dash. Let me tell you one of my biggest, the thing I'm most hesitant about is that there's no view app. So I can't see what she's done. Like if I tell her to do this many carbs, like I can't actually see that she's done that because there's been times where she hasn't. And then of course that results in really high blood sugars and stuff. So, and I know they're working on it. Like the Omnipod FAQ section says that they are working on a view app for the Omnipod 5. But like right now with DIY Loop, I use Night Scout and I can see everything that she does. Yeah. And I again, with the control freak situation, I'm like, I don't know if I want to lose that. So,
yeah. So with the 5.2, it's not compatible. I don't know if you're a Samsung girl or an Apple girl, but it's not compatible with iOS yet. And that had me wound up. I was like, oh my God, come on. Like, I was so excited to get rid of a phone. Like, her kids in her class were like, Why doesn't they have two phones? And I was really hoping to just get rid of one. And
yep.
They were like, maybe someday soon. I'm like, you know what, on the pod? Come on, man.
They have to be working around the clock to get that done, because I would say over half the population uses iPhone. Like, they've got to get that done. So, and they have said several times, like, we're working on it. We're working on it. And I know that Apple's kind of a pain in the butt when it comes to, like, jumping through their hoops and getting across their red tape. So I think it's just a matter of time. But yeah, I think same. I totally agree. I'm like, can we just get rid of one device? That would be so great.
I know. She would be less mortified when she got them out, for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess we should talk about this chapter. All right. So we're going to dive in. Again, the name of the chapter is Taming the Highs and Lows. Again, I just want to encourage people. The author, Gary Shiner, is amazing. He was so kind in giving me the green light to do this series. And I just highly recommend that you buy a copy of the book. I refer back to it all the time when I just need to be reminded of something. Don't rely on me and Sam to give you every single detail of this chapter. Like, there's just too much for us to talk about in an hour-long podcast. And there's also lots of graphs and tables that you're going to want to see with your eyes that I really just cannot possibly do a good job of describing with words. So get a copy and follow along with us. Okay, so the first thing that I loved about this chapter is the author reminds us that even people who manage their diabetes to a T and meticulously still spend around 25% of their time out of range. So everybody just take a deep breath. Perfection is rarely achieved without losing your mind, at least. So just keep that in the back of your mind. But he really starts off strong in the chapter about encouraging people to do whatever they can to prevent low blood sugars, because there's really just no benefit to having multiple low blood sugars. I mean, as his wife, the author's wife, so lovingly said, she said, any idiot can have a decent A1C if they're taking too much insulin and going low all the time. So, and that's true, right? Like, you can be having these major crashes, which will lower your A1C, but it's just not safe and it's not healthy for anybody. So, you know, I'll give some reasons soon, other reasons why you want to avoid the lows. But the author kind of defines mild lows as like in the 70s, getting closer to like upper 60s. Moderate lows, he says, are like in the 50s and 40s. And then severe lows are more like in the 20s and 30s, or if you just have a really prolonged, like, moderate low. But mild lows, okay, so here's the reasons why you want to prevent these things. They cause poor physical and mental performance, which can be embarrassing. They can impair judgment, which can be dangerous. And then they can cause mood changes, which can just be frustrating for everybody involved. And they also can cause weight gain and rebound high blood sugars, which in other words is known as the diabetes roller coaster. And that's definitely not a ride that you want to get on. And then the severe lows, you know, are super dangerous. They can cause seizures, loss of consciousness, coma, or even death. So, and they actually, if you're having several severe lows, they can increase your risk of developing dementia later in your life.
God.
I know, right? That's happy.
Oh, that made me, like, want to be high all the time.
I know. Actually, after reading this chapter, I've like made it my goal this summer to avoid low blood sugars at all costs. I'm like, let's focus on this. Cause I think I was more focused on preventing the highs, which I still don't like, but now I'm like, okay, let's try to prevent those lows. Okay.
Yeah.
This is interesting. He also says that too many lows can actually lead to like he calls it a devolution of symptoms, or just kind of a breakdown of low symptoms over time, which is also known as hypoglycemia unawareness. So this is when you do not feel or experience signs of low blood sugar just until it's too late. And then at that point in time, you really can't think clearly enough to treat your low properly. And then research has also shown good news that this can be reversed if you spend several weeks above 80 milligrams per deciliter. So you're trying to avoid lows altogether. And of course, that may cause like a small bump in your A1C number, but to regain the ability to self-detect those signs and symptoms of lows, it's like absolutely worth it. So I have some questions for you, Samantha.
Hit me.
I'm curious to know, like, what low symptoms do you and your daughter experience? And then have you ever experienced the devolution of symptoms that he talks about?
So for me, I'm like unfortunately hyper aware of being low. Like my Dexcom might be reading like, let's just for example, say like 201. But I stacked a ton of insulin and I start to feel low at 200. So Amelia like will sometimes do that too. She'll be like, I think I'm low. And I'll check her and I'm like, you're not though. Like your dots are fine. You're 180. You're not low. And she has 3 units on board. And then don't you know it, she gets up, walks around for 5 minutes and is crashing. Mm. Like, so it's, we both just get like a little, I think like everyone else, just like a little bit sweaty. I can feel that my pulse is going up. Like I get a little, I can tell my pulse is higher and I'm shaky. But she more or less is just shaky. Like she starts to feel a little offbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's really it for her.
Yeah. Okay. Does she and you and say, Mommy, I feel low, or how does she like, verbalize it?
Well, I feel so bad because I used to like, she'd say, and I'd be like, you're not low, Amelia. Go sit down. Because I thought she wanted a snack. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, you're not eating a snack. We've just had lunch. Like every other mom. And then like 10 minutes later, she'd be low. So yeah, she always comes to me. She'll be like, and she just recently started like checking the Dexcom on her own. Like she'll be like, am I low? And I'd be like, look at your phone. Like really trying to like encourage a habit because again, control freak mom. I'm like, oh, I'll check it for you. I'm watching your blood sugar every time, you know? Oh my gosh. But yeah, she just recently started like checking on her own. Like, you know what? I felt weird and I'm 85 sideways down. Like, should I eat something? And that's like a huge turning point for us.
That's awesome. Yeah. Sarah, I feel like Sarah still has the ability to recognize her lows for the most part. Every now and then it'll go unnoticed, but like she'll say, I feel low, and her hand, she always holds her hands out and you can see
Me too.
Shaking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't even at that point in time, if she's having symptoms, like I don't care what the Dexcom says, I'll just give her like five Skittles, just to give her peace of mind. And then I'll be like, okay, let's do a finger prick and double check to see where you're really at. Because, you know, sometimes other things can present like lows, like anxiety, or maybe you've been out in the heat for a really long time and you just, I don't know, you feel lightheaded.
Or you're high, you know,
True. Yeah. Okay. Have you ever experienced, I'm assuming no, just based on what you tell me, but like, so you've always been able to detect your lows. You've never like lost that ability?
No, never. The only time that I might miss it, and anytime Amelia might miss it, would be more like in the middle of the night, like when you're dead asleep and wake up drenched in sweat. Before the Dexcom, it used to be so bad. Like the Dexcom is life changing because before that came out, I would just be like living on a prayer. Oh my God. The way things were done, I said to me all the time, like the way that diabetes had changed for you, like it used to be so bad. And now it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I have 25 years of time. It's just so different. It's so different.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know that life and I don't know how y'all did it. So my hat is off to you. No, I don't want to. That's right.
No.
All right. Well, the author then jumps into like treatment of mild to moderate lows, which that just depends on a variety of factors because your diabetes may vary. Everybody's different and responds differently to, you know, carbohydrates, but it definitely, you know, usually depends on how big you are. So like the bigger your body size is, usually you're going to need more carbs to kind of bring your number up. Table 9-1 in the book kind of gives several examples of different body sizes and like about how many carbs you would need to bring you up. And then it also depends on like, what is the blood sugar level? Like the lower the blood sugar is at the time, you're obviously going to need more carbs to bring that up. It also depends on the rate of change, which is like the arrows that you see on your CGM graph. So, you know, if you're treating a 90, you know, straight arrow down, which I guess that's not technically a low at that point in time, but it's heading in that direction, you know, versus a 50 double arrow down, you're going to need more carbs to correct that 50 double arrow down than you would for the 90 with just one arrow down. And then you also need to pay attention to the dots. This is Katie's advice, not the author's advice, but that has been such a huge help to us. And I actually did a whole episode on it. It's episode number 50, but your Dexcom I'm not super familiar with Libre, but for us, like our Dexcom might say 100 double arrow down, which at the beginning of all this would have sent me into a panic. But I've learned like, if you look at the dots, you know, sometimes the arrows have not caught up with the dots. Cause sometimes you'll look at the dots and you can see that line is straightening out. So it's not continuing to go straight down. And that just has helped me be like, okay, wait, we are leveling out. I think the arrows just need a minute to catch up. Like, I don't want to overtreat the slow because then we're going to be dealing with a high. I would encourage everybody to pay attention to the dots. Do you do that?
Yeah. So my husband was actually the one with the clarity on that because I was a big arrow girl for the longest time. And it kind of like would send Amelia into like a panic because she would see the double arrows and just lose her mind. We're huge on saying like to ourselves, like, remember, it's like how we feel, not what the Dexcom says. So if you eat and you feel like you're starting to feel better, then if the Dexcom still says double arrows, think about how you're feeling. Don't read the number. We've even gone as far as like turning off the Bluetooth to not hear the sound because, oh my gosh, it's like that. It's that external stuff that like really shouldn't matter, but your body's now like trained to like your brain's reading these dots and arrows like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But in reality, like it has how you're feeling inside has nothing to do with what the dots or the arrows are telling you, which is unfortunate.
I know, like Sarah, you know, you said you guys turned the Bluetooth off or turned the alarms off, but we had to change. I guess it was our low alarm. Used to be the crying baby because I wanted to
like. Oh, my husband too.
Yeah. I'm like, what's going to really get my attention? And it was that wailing baby. But that would give Sarah so much anxiety when that baby would start crying that like I had to change it because she just could not handle it. She would like, it was so bad. I'm like, okay, well, we can't do the crying baby anymore. Let's pick a different alarm.
That was us. Exactly us.
I thought about doing the ambulance one, but I'm like, I don't want that to go off when I'm in the car because I'm going to think there's like a cop right behind me or a fire truck or whatever. The siren.
Did yours like originally like sound like her high chime and mine too, obviously, but her high chime and low chime sound different. So like the high is like a, but the low is like a deeper, you know what I mean? Was hers originally like that?
I don't remember what it was originally because I feel like we changed it pretty quickly from the like list of options that you can choose. Now we have it. Her high alarm sounds like she just won a video game. It's like do or whatever. And my husband always says new high score. Like, yeah. And then her low it's just like the beeping.
Yeah.
All right. The author does briefly talk about what foods are best to treat a low. So obviously like high GI foods. So glucose tabs are a good example. Smarties, candies. Those are like straight up dextrose. Sweet tarts. Those gels that you can inhale pretty quickly. Spree candies, Airheads, Runts, Nerds, and bottle caps. And then just like a juice box. Those are all probably the best thing to treat a low quickly. I know when Sarah was getting ready to go back to school after her diagnosis, the nurse that was there training the staff on type 1 diabetes was like, what are you bringing to treat lows? And I was like, she likes Skittles and it makes it easy math for me. And the nurse was like, well, we really need to think about a healthier option. Like, what about strawberries? And I was like, listen, lady.
You obviously don't get it.
I'm like, strawberries are a healthy choice and she will have plenty of those in her actual lunch. But if we need to get her blood sugar up quickly, she's going to be eating candy or drinking a juice box because I'm not going to play around with that while she's at school. So
I actually got detention in high school for eating candy when I was low and not having something healthy. She wrote me up for detention. The nurse did.
Are you serious? Did you get out of it?
Swear to God. Yeah, no, I walked down to the office and the principal who like knew my mom was like, why are you here, Sam? I had never gotten detention in my life. And I was like, I ate candy instead of fruit when I was low. He ripped up the paper and flung me and put it in his trash can. He's like, go back to class. I was like, okay.
Jeez Louise, that's ridiculous. I mean, I can see that. I can see it happening, but oh my gosh, that's annoying.
People don't really get it. It's like, it's such so frustrating and it will be for like our kids. Like it's so frustrating because unless you love someone with diabetes or have it yourself, you do not get it. It's like stressful.
I know. But it's also annoying to have to explain it to everybody, you know? I feel like I've just kind of adopted the mindset of like, whatever, they don't understand, they never will. Like, why am I going to try to explain, you know what I mean? Like, why waste my breath? Which, I don't know, maybe that's not, I mean, education is important, but you know, I feel like you got to learn when is the proper time to educate and when you just need to be like, smile and nod. Just smile and nod.
Okay, thank you. Thanks
so much. Yeah. What do you guys use to treat lows?
Sounds so ridiculous. We are huge on Tropical Punch Kool-Aid. It is so stinking sweet. So I literally, if we're coming down, we have these like little tiny, you know, the glasses that come with like your normal glasses, like the little short guys.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One of them is like solves the problem every time. So Amelia always wants to like add a Snickers in there, but I'm like, let's just try Kool-Aid first. Like, let's just try a drink because it's like too much.
Right. We'll add that Snickers to your dinner later today.
Yes. Yeah. Forever.
I love that. So are you just like old school mixing it up with the powder and the water in a pitcher?
Old school girl. Two packets of sugar. It's always in my fridge.
I'm going to buy some just to try it. I love it.
You gotta.
Man, I could crush some grape Kool-Aid when I was a kid. That was my favorite. Yeah.
Same. So we have learned that this could just be us. I don't know if it's the red dye. I don't know what it is, but the tropical punch has like somehow some better effect with treating load. Like we got the orange and I like chugged one day and it like did nothing for my blood sugar. And I'm like, what is happening? It could be in my brain. I don't know what it is, but tropical punch hits it every time.
Okay. All right. Tropical punch. Now that is a fun science experiment for your daughter to do. Of like which flavor of Kool-Aid will bring my blood sugar back up the quickest when I'm having a low.
The blue raspberry lemonade does too much. Like, she could have like a shot glass of blue raspberry lemonade Kool-Aid and it would just knock her on her butt. So we're like never changing the flavor. My husband's always like, can we try something else? I'm like, no, it has to be this.
Denied. Not happening.
Denied. That's what we're doing. No change.
Okay. I'm going to try it. I'm going to let you know how it goes.
I can't wait.
Okay. The author does throw in a quick blurb about overtreating your lows because we've all been there, right? Either whether we're panicking and we're just shoving candy and juice in our kids' faces or our faces, or you're just, because I don't know, because I don't have type 1, but I've heard that when you have a low, you're like extra hungry, which my daughter actually verbalized that for the first time the other day. She's like, Mommy, I just feel so hungry when I'm low. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's the first time I heard you say that. So it's easy to overtreat lows. The author just suggests that if you do, like if you recognize that you have overtreated your low, once your blood sugar comes up to like a reasonable level, like it's recovered, you go ahead and dose for the, you know, to cover the carbs that you overtreated with, which is a bold move, you know, if you just recovered from a low. But do you guys, you know, what's your kind of experience been with overtreating lows?
So with Amelia, it's kind of, we're very careful with her while she's at school, because to have that rebound, like where you were already low and then overdid it and she's like trying to learn and stuff in school, that's just like too much for her. So we're super careful with her. Mm-hmm. But before the Dexcom, before I could like really see what was going on, I would like eat like a whole stinking bag of gummy bears or something like when I was low, because it is so true. It's like you're super hungry, but you also feel like, it doesn't even feel like hunger to me. It used to feel like almost like you were medicating something. Like it almost felt like you were taking more and more and more and more until you felt right. Like not like you until you felt full, because you never feel full. Like you could just eat forever. Mm. But it was almost like until you didn't feel low anymore. But then by that time, you were far past the amount of carbohydrates you had eaten. Mm-hmm. And I had done that for literally ever. And if it was up to Amelia, she would do the same. But I'm always like, hey. Because one time she crushed a bag of gummy bears and I'm like, Meals, what are you doing? You're supposed to have five. And she was like, oh, they're just really good. But I know what was really happening was like, she just like didn't realize how many she was eating. Like she was just like feeling low and needing to eat. But so she was like, they tasted really good. I got them for her like a week later and she's like, ew, these are gross. Why'd you buy them? I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That solidifies what just happened.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I have to send Sarah to school with something that she likes well enough to eat to treat her lows, but not to where she likes so much that she will just like overeat. Like I was for a while there, I was sending her with Gatorade and I would like mark the bottle. With like, oh okay, like if you have a low, I want you to drink to this line and then I'll let you know if you need to drink some more. Well, she would just like start drinking the Gatorade and not stop. And I'm like, okay, we need to not send you with Gatorade anymore.
Diabetes like turns off your self-control. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. Self-control is hard enough as it is without diabetes.
Yeah.
Yes, I can see where that would be definitely, even just with the anxiety of treating it low, like you just kind of are maybe a little panicked and you're like, I need to drink the whole jug. I just have to drink the whole thing.
That's meals, 100%. Me, I'm like, the other day I was 41 when I woke up and my husband saw my alarm and he was like, I'll go get something to eat. And I was like, oh no, I've got to probably actually eat something, not just a Snickers. And I had to put down our baby and go and eat something. And he was like, Sam, 41, how did that happen? And what's really happened is my basal is like all messed up from the baby yet. And I took Lantix and I had adjusted it like 5 extra units. Well, that was too many. Like, mm-hmm. I was low that whole day.
Oh, no. How old's your baby?
He is 4 months yesterday.
Oh, my gosh. You, like, just had a baby.
I did just have a baby. I literally just went back to work like a month ago.
Oh, my gosh. Well, congratulations. When you said you had a baby and your insulin was all out of whack, I was like, well, I just assumed it was like a couple years ago. But you, like,
have a new one. He's a new guy.
Oh my gosh, you're amazing! You have a type 1 daughter. You have type 1 yourself. You just had a newborn, and you just went back to work. Oh my gosh, you're amazing!
Yeah, he was an IVF baby on top of all of that. So,
oh yeah,
he was like a hard working baby.
Yes, yep. You worked for that one. Okay, all right. The author,
for sure.
Yes, yep. The author transitions into treatment of severe lows, which hopefully we don't have to experience those, or at least not many of those in our life. But he just kind of gives some tips for that. So he says, definitely do not, like, if somebody is having a seizure or has like blacked out, do not put food or drink in their mouth because they could choke on it, or it could go into their lungs, which is not good. Definitely don't stick your fingers in their mouth, because if they're having a seizure, they could chomp down on your fingers and do some major damage. This should be number one on the list, but call for emergency help, right? And then administer the glucagon. And he actually, on page 267 and 268 of the book, he like bullet points out the steps to treating a severe low using those traditional red glucagon kits. And because he's like, the instructions for those things are not written in a language that anyone can understand. It's so confusing. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, if you're in a panic mode trying to treat a severe low, like, you're not going to take the time to read those instructions. So he like writes them out in plain English for you, which is very nice to have. And then he says, you know, the person should come to in like 10 to 20 minutes. You know, hopefully by that time, if you've called 911, the paramedics have arrived also. But he also makes a note that, like, if you are sick or your child is sick and they cannot keep anything down, but they're having a low blood sugar, you can actually use those emergency red glucagon kits to microdose the glucagon, and just to like bump their blood sugar up if they can't, you know, if they're vomiting and they can't keep anything down.
Right.
And then he says, and we need to get one. Sarah does not wear one, but he says you should always be wearing a medical ID bracelet or have something in your wallet, like a wallet card, or wear a necklace that has your medical ID, because first responders are trained to look for those things first. So bracelet, necklace, or wallet. And I think tattoos actually are pretty popular too.
Yeah.
Like, have it tattooed on your wrist. Yeah. So have you or your daughter ever experienced an extreme low?
Honestly, there was only one time where I was super low. And it was because, again, during the whole IVF business, I was stuck at 400 for like hours. And my doctor had like really pushed hard on, you know, we were doing this egg retrieval and, you know, my blood sugars had to be perfect, blah, blah, blah. And like, again, this was not an endocrinologist who doesn't really get it, but still that stuff mm-hmm. in my brain. And I was mm-hmm. stuck at like 400 for like 5 hours. So I was stacking on. Didn't have a pump. Didn't really remember how much insulin I took. And when mm-hmm. it all came crashing down, oh my goodness, it was so bad. I was like walking into CVS and we were like picking something up, I think. And I remember like leaning on my husband's shoulder and he was like, what's going on? And I'm like, I think something's wrong. And he like got my phone out of my purse and it was like low, double arrow down. Cause I like didn't see it coming. And he was like, oh, great. Well, thank God we knew the pharmacist. He like found one of my prescriptions with the glucagon on it. We just did it right there at CVS. And I like, oh my gosh. They say 10 to 20 minutes, but for me, like I felt better instantly. Like I put it in and I was like instantly better.
Really? Okay.
Which is insane, right? Because it's like, yeah. It obviously wasn't like passed out or like near death or anything, but I was like not doing well. And I like took it and I was like standing straight up, ready to party. And my husband was like, what just happened?
That's crazy.
Like, I know. Badness. But it like does kind of calm your nerves with the whole like, if God forbid, you know, I mean, it was the one of the mm-hmm. girls were super low, you know, that it's not like you're not sitting there standing over there then for 10 minutes being like, okay, like,
yeah,
not working now, like, you know.
Yeah, I've heard several moms who have had to do that to their kids. Like most of them have said that, like, of course they called, you know, for emergency services, but like by the time they got there, their kid was really fine because they had administered the glucagon and like, and they, a lot of times they didn't even end up having to go to the hospital. I'm just curious, like, do you remember what your blood sugar went up to after you used the glucagon? I've always just, and I'm sure everybody's different, but
yeah,
I want to know, like, how high is it going to take you?
So I was unrecognizable high on the Dexcom, and I was 490, I think, on my meter.
Okay, so it's going to take you up.
And I felt like garbage.
Yeah, after that low so and then the high. Things.
Save your life, but yeah. If you pay for it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, like, who really cares what you're going to go up to? Like, let's just get it
exactly,
in you. But
exactly, yeah.
I'm just, I've always wanted to know. Like,
it's one of those things. Like, if you're taking glucagon, like, you almost want to take insulin with it as you're taking it because it's like, you are going to pay for this for sure.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I almost, when I had the, I wore a Dexcom for 10 days a month or two ago, and I was like so tempted. Too, because my daughter has all these nasal spray vaccinis, and like some of them are like on the verge of being expired, and I'm like, I'm just so tempted to like try this just because I want to see how a normal pancreas would handle this. Like if it would, I did not. I just feel like that's not the right thing to do. But I was just thinking about like I'm just curious. I wonder how this would affect like a normal system.
Play with fire a little bit, yeah,
exactly. Okay, interesting. All right. I think that's all I wanted to say from that section. Oh, do you guys wear medical ID bracelets or necklaces or anything?
No, we don't. We probably should, but we're newly in this place where like we're very observant of like what people think of us. Well, Amelia is. So we're working through that where she's very, really worried about like people knowing she's low or seeing that she's eating and they're not allowed to eat in school. So
yeah,
everyone knows she's diabetic. I read to her class and any other scenario, I'm always with her so far. So until she's a little bit older and I'm not really around as much, I'm kind of letting that one fly.
Yeah, that's true. Sarah doesn't wear one either. And we're kind of in the same boat. Like Sarah does not, as little as humanly possible, like do not call her out or make her feel
sick. Yeah.
Even if that means wearing like a pretty silver bracelet. She's like, nope, I don't want to do that. Like, because she's
just...
Yeah.
It's, I feel so bad for them, but
I do too. I mean, I get it. That doesn't bother. I mean, it bothers me. It makes me sad to think they're so self-conscious about it, but I get it. I can sympathize with that. All right. The author goes through, kind of gives a good list of just tips for preventing lows in the first place. I'm just going to kind of quickly read through these. And Sam, you can let me know kind of what has helped you and like what you've just found to be helpful off of this list, sure. But using a CGM properly, which sounds like a no-brainer, but you know, you need to turn on your alerts and you need to make sure they are set at a point, a threshold above the point of hypoglycemia. Because if you have it set at like 60, it might be a little bit too late. If if your kid is 60 double arrow down, like you want it to alert you before that. So you have a little bit more time to recover gracefully from the low. So set your alerts at a reasonable level. I think Sarah's is set at like, I have it set differently on a few different apps, but I want to say it's somewhere between 70 and 80 on the apps that I have. I like it to be set a little higher because I, you know, at 80, I feel like we can catch it before it gets to be a scary low.
Yeah, we're at a hard 80 on everything.
Okay. Okay. Author suggests use a hybrid closed loop system such as Tandem Control IQ, Omnipod 5, or DIY Loop. Those are the systems that adjust your basal rate. So if it predicts that you're going to go too low, it will like shut off your basal, which is pretty cool. They are great, especially if you want to sleep through the night, but they are frustrating because like Sam and I already discussed, if you're a control freak, they can be frustrating. Like sometimes you don't want it to shut off the basal, but okay. Author also suggests matching your insulin to your needs, which, you know, makes sense. Don't have more insulin than you need. That obviously takes a lot of trial and error to kind of figure out how much you or your kid needs and at different times of the day. He suggests using a rapid acting insulin rather than like regular insulin because rapid acting clears the system in like 3 to 4 hours. So it offers less risk of blood glucose levels declining even after food has digested. Regular insulin takes a lot longer to get cleared from the system. You want to dose properly and precisely if possible. So if you can get your hands on like syringes or, you know, pre-filled insulin cartridges or insulin pins that have like half unit measurements. So you can be more precise in your dosing. You want to give your insulin time to work. So in other words, you don't want to stack your insulin. Boluses of rapid acting insulin can take 3 to 4 hours and sometimes more to stop working. So don't stack it. Now, I will say that we do not follow this rule all the time because I just feel like, yes, the longer time goes on, I do feel like you just kind of learn to know your kid's body and you just kind of know, okay, I just need to give this some time. So let me be patient and wait it out. Or, okay, this is just not going to bring her down anytime soon and I need to get more insulin. So I don't know. I just feel like you kind of figure that out as time goes on. Sure. You want to time your boluses properly. So for this one, like if you're eating a really heavy meal or a meal with a lot of fat and protein, you probably don't want to give your insulin ahead of time. You might want to wait until like you're eating the meal or maybe right until you finish the meal, just because you don't want your insulin to like peak or be working its strongest before your food even has a chance to digest, because all that fat slows down digestion and your carbs, those carbs don't get into the system for quite some time. You want to set appropriate targets. So the lower the target, the greater the chances of hypoglycemia, because like targets of 80 or 90, they don't leave a whole lot of room for error. So he suggests aiming for a target of 100 or more, which I think that's in all of our calculations and our pump settings. That's our target is 100 at the moment. If you are coming off a day where you had a low or your numbers were just super erratic and crazy, or maybe you like exercised really, really heavily, the author suggests consider making your target higher for the next 24 to 48 hours. If you usually have it at like 90 or 100, you know, the next day or two, you might want to have it at like 120 or something that's going to keep you a little safer. And then he says to time meals and snacks appropriately, which we don't do this. I'm just going to say we just kind of eat. I mean, I guess we kind of eat at the same time. Lunch. No, let me start over. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner around the same time. But anyway, he just makes it a big, like, apparently if you're using NPH, which I feel like not many people are using that at this time, but if you are, yeah, you like really have to be scheduled about when you eat. And even as little as a half an hour being off schedule can make a huge difference and cause you to have low blood sugars. But then even if you're on a long acting insulin, like some of the more commonly used ones, like he mentions glargine, Basaglar, or Detemir, if you're off by like a few hours with your meals and snacks, it can cause significant drops in blood sugar, which I did not know. We're almost done with the list. He says you also want to deduct fiber. So fiber is included in the carb count on like all the prepackaged labels, nutrition facts and whatnot, but fiber does not get converted into glucose during digestion. So he suggests that you subtract the grams of fiber from the total carbohydrate count. He also says you need to adjust for exercise and daily activity, which we've discussed at length in previous episodes. That was a lot of what chapter 7 and 8 was about. So you can go back and review that. But he says if you are using a hybrid closed loop system and you're like exercising or doing a lot of activity, you definitely want to raise the target blood glucose at least an hour before exercising, which I know the Omnipod 5 that your daughter's on has like the exercise mode, or I forget what the activity mode.
Yeah.
And isn't the target like 150?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's super cool. I haven't used it yet. I think it only works for when you're in automatic mode, which we have not tested yet, but I'm looking forward to the day that I do.
I love it.
Oh my God.
You're like, we're not doing it. We're not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Self-control.
Yeah. The DIY loop has, they call them overrides, but it's the same thing. You can like tell it what you want the target to be at. And at first I was just turning them on, the overrides on, like right before Sarah would go to dance class or right before she'd get in the pool. And then I realized like, oh, I need to like turn this on an hour or two before if I actually want it to be effective. So
yeah, we're big tent basal girl in that scenario. Mm-hmm.
I know. I do miss tent basals and extended boluses. Those are non-existent with the DIY loop system. Yep.
Oh, no.
I know. All right. He also, last two things. He says you want to adjust for alcohol to prevent low blood sugars because alcohol, go back and listen to episode 60. That's the episode on how alcohol affects somebody with type 1 diabetes. But long story short, it can cause your numbers to drop. So after you've been drinking, you want to make sure you lower your basal level or you need to consume some extra carbohydrates. And then he ends with, you just need to check and evaluate. Look for patterns of lows in your CGM data or your logbooks if you've been keeping those. And then just really talk it through with your healthcare team on how you can kind of prevent those lows in the future if you're seeing those patterns. All right. So Sam, what on that long list of tips to prevent lows kind of stuck out to you? Like, you know, what have you struggled with? Or maybe what have you been really successful with? Any of the above?
The half units was huge. Like that I feel like with them trying to figure, like, regulate everything and all that, I think half units were just, if we weren't able to do half units during the night and stuff like that, she'd be crashing left and right and she'd be high. It's just half units really changed the world. But it really helped us both having like the IOB, like, so we were able to see how many to prevent stacking, because I feel like that was such a huge thing before. If you were MDI and you like weren't have, you didn't have a pump on you that was showing you how many insulin units you took, or you know, you just kept taking it like that. And it wasn't really something that like your endocrinologist talked about. Like, they were never like, they were like, oh, you took insulin 2 hours ago and like that's fine, like you should keep in mind you don't take more insulin until 2 hours. Well, in reality it's like 4 for us, you know what I mean? Like, it's 4 hours until it's completely out of the immune system. So it's like, oh gosh. So that really changed everything. Having the insulin on board to check to see how much we took, the half units, and honestly, like the 10 basal function, that is huge for us. Because she is so much, like, for her, I'm not there when she's at school. And if I know she's going to be in gym, if I know she's going to recess, I can call her, like, see her kind of turning down, and I'm like, hey, babe, turn your basal off. And that almost always saves the day.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I mean, usually if you can catch it quick enough, it can, you know, prevent you from having to treat the low with food, which I think is great, you know?
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, as fun as it sounds to eat candy all day long, it really does get old, I think, according to my daughter.
It does.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
Yeah. And I did want to say, and I'm sure you've heard of this too, but like for listeners that are on MDI, like if you want to have access to those kind of like pump features of being able to see insulin on board and keeping track of all of that, the Medtronic InPen, which this is not an ad and this is not sponsored by Medtronic, but like the Medtronic InPen has Bluetooth technology where you actually connect it. You connect your insulin pen to an app on your phone or your kid's phone, whoever's the type one, and it keeps track of all that dosing information for you. So you can flip open the app and see, oh, I have this much insulin on board. Maybe instead of giving more insulin, I just need to get up and move around a little bit or whatever the case may be. So I did an interview with a girl. This was like towards the beginning of the podcast episodes, but she uses the InPen and she said it's like really helped her with rage bolusing and not stacking her insulin.
I love that phrase. I rage bolus so much. It's not even funny.
I know. I do too. But again, I feel like I've learned of when I need to rage bolus and when I need to not rage bolus. So.
It's so funny that you mentioned the InPen too, because I'm a nurse and work for an insurance company, and I'm working at a pharmacy. So I review different meds and all that stuff. And I create the question set for like prior authorization. So like all the people that are out there that are like, oh my gosh, I submitted this for a prior auth and I'm waiting on this insurance company forever. Like, hi, it's me. It's me you're waiting on. Like, so I just got the InPen policy up today and I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds so cool.
It is so cool. We actually own 2 InPens, which I don't even know how that happened, to be quite honest. They did not send me one. I purchased one through our insurance, and for whatever reason, I picked it up at the pharmacy, and then like 2 weeks later, another one came in the mail. So I don't know what happened, but we have 2 and we have not used them yet because my daughter hasn't wanted to take a pump break recently. But when she does, or if she does, we will definitely try it out because I think they're awesome.
I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about dealing with the post-meal spikes. So that was the first part of the chapter was all about the lows. Now we're going to move on to talking about those high blood sugars. A fancy word for a post-meal, like after you've eaten, is postprandial. So you might hear some endocrinologists say that and some researchers. I know that I did an interview with a guy once that he said that word like 20 times and I had to Google it because I had no idea what he was talking about. But postprandial, that means after me. I'm not going to use it, but I just want people to know. Okay. So I just look like real quick. I just want to give listeners a review of what happens in a normal functioning pancreas system, somebody without type 1 diabetes. This just helps me to remember that like it's real hard to be a pancreas because our systems are so efficient and when they are working, it's just amazing what they can do. And to try to like mimic that as a human with like outside medications, it's just not easy. So when somebody without type 1 diabetes starts eating, the pancreas like immediately releases insulin and it starts to produce amylin, which is another hormone. Both insulin and amylin come from the beta cells. So those are the cells that get destroyed in type 1 diabetes. And the insulin that our body makes in our pancreas, it starts working like literally immediately, and it finishes it the whole job that it was set out to do in a matter of minutes. And then there's amylin, which is also, it's a hormone that keeps food from reaching the intestines too quickly. So basically it slows down digestion. So the reason why blood sugars spike so much after meals in someone with type 1 diabetes is because number one, food digests much faster because we don't have that, you know, you don't have that amylin working. And then the insulin that you get out of a cartridge or a vial works much, much slower than what the insulin that the pancreas makes. And so I just think that's important to remember to keep everybody's mind and perspective of this is really a hard job and we're doing the best that we can. But the author says that significant post-meal spikes have been shown to produce earlier onset of kidney disease and accelerate the progression of already existing eye problems. So just keep that in mind. You know, they're going to happen, but let's try to keep them from happening all the time. Glucose variability, which is like the standard deviation number that you see on your CGM data, that is associated, like the higher that number is, the more likely you are to have long-term cognitive impairment and increases your risk for dementia, which, ew, who wants to think about that? I think that's in pretty severe cases, but
yeah,
just wanted to throw that out there. But then in the short term, you know, your quality of life can suffer with these giant spikes in blood sugar. They make you have low energy, poor brain function, your moods can be altered, and your physical and athletic ability becomes diminished, which you mentioned that after you had to treat that low and you had that giant spike. And I'm sure you've you know, probably experienced it other times that you just feel crummy, right?
Yeah, awful.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I never really heard the time behind it, but apparently most post-meal spikes happen about an hour and 15 minutes after the start of a meal, which I was thinking about us eating breakfast, which is usually when we see our biggest spikes. And that's pretty spot on. Like an hour and 15, maybe an hour and a half after breakfast is when, if she's going to spike, that's when we see the spike. And then table 9.3 in the book just gives a really sweet summary of after meal blood glucose targets kind of based on age. So usually a little bit more conservative for the younger kids. And then the author jumps right on into how to better control post-meal spikes. So I'll, again, Sam, I'll read down the list and you can kind of just tell me what stuck out to you and like what you've used and what you've been successful with you or your daughter. But he says you want to choose the right insulin. So again, NPH, regular insulin is not great because it takes forever to start working. You know, if possible, you really want to choose like a Humalog or a Novolog that works, you know, a rapid acting insulin that works faster. And then there's FIASP, which is an ultra rapid acting insulin that works about 5 or 10 minutes faster than Novolog or Humalog, and it gets cleared out of the system faster, maybe like an hour faster or so. And then Afrezza, which is the inhalable insulin. Sarah's not old enough to use it. I think you have to be 18 to use Afrezza, but I've heard great things. So if your kid or you are over the age of 18, maybe you might want to look into that. Author suggests using a pre-bolus for most meals. A pre-bolus is when you give insulin 15 to 20 minutes before eating, since it can take that long for insulin to even start working. Again, you would not want to do this with like a really heavy, fatty meal. Like a good example is pizza or fettuccine Alfredo or anything that has like a really rich, creamy sauce to it. Lots of cheese, stuff like that. Okay. He also says, you know, avoiding the post-meal spikes, you might want to consider using like, he calls it the super bolus technique, which I think is a term that was coined by the guy that wrote the sugar surfing book. I think, don't quote me on that. But this is a technique where if you're on a pump, unfortunately only pump users can use this technique, but you would turn off your basal rate for a few hours, like maybe 3 hours. And so, but you're missing 3 hours worth of basal. So instead you would actually take that insulin up front. So if you have your basal rate set at like 1 unit an hour and you turn it off for 3 hours, you would actually take those 3 units of insulin that you would be missing up front. And this would be for like a higher GI meal that's going to hit your system like really hard and really fast. So a good example would be like breakfast cereal, because you might need all that insulin up front to kind of combat that after meal spike. We've tried that a few times with breakfast cereal, and I would say like 3/4 of the time it worked really great. And then of course there's just those other times where diabetes doesn't play by the rules and
it did not
cereal work, right? And breakfast is a beast to handle no matter what, I feel.
Yes. Yep. I agree. It really is. You know, we've gotten better, but there's still some days. And it's certain cereals. Like, I've noticed that any cereal that involves cinnamon, which is ironic, right? Because random people like...
people tell you to eat it.
Yeah. People tell you that cinnamon will cure diabetes. But I have found that any cereal that, you know, even like a quote unquote healthy cereal with cinnamon, I don't know what it is, but it's like always the worst. So, but yeah, breakfast cereal is for sure a beast. Okay. I'm like quickly checking in on Sarah, and she's at camp and her Dexcom says 92 straight arrow down, but the dots suggest otherwise. So I'm going to give it a minute. And I also just told her to eat some Smarties. So I feel like she's going to start coming back up. Sorry. Had to take a brief pause there.
That's okay. I thought it was low before we started, so I was like inhaling a plum and a nectarine, just going hard in it. And I'm 2:30 now, so I was wrong.
Oh no! Oh man! I'm sorry.
Don't go guessing, people.
I couldn't tell you how many carbs are in a plum. That's not usually a fruit I buy, but I'll have to look it up when we're done. Okay, this is interesting. But if you inject rapid acting insulin into a muscle, it can bring your number down in about like half the time. I have not experimented on this with Sarah because I just feel like that's not my, I don't know. I don't want to, that feels like I'm messing with fire. So I'm just, I'll let her try that when she's an adult and when she makes up her own mind to do that. But anyway, he said that this can also cause bruising and you might need to use a little bit longer syringe or pen needle because you got to go a little deeper to get into the muscle. He suggests you could warm the site before you eat, which I mean, who really has time to do that? But you could kind of like put a warm compress over the area that you're going to inject the insulin into, and that makes the insulin get absorbed faster. He suggests that you get moving. So 10 to 15 minutes of mild activity after you eat, like immediately after you eat, typically does the job. And he says the key is just to avoid sitting for long periods of time after eating, which if you've ever gone to the movie theater with your type 1 diabetic and they've eaten movie theater snacks and have sat through a movie, you will figure that out really quickly.
Yes.
100%. It's like the worst. Yes. So get moving and then don't smoke or vape because that constricts your blood vessels and your insulin cannot move around properly and get absorbed if your blood vessels are shrunk. So don't smoke or vape. All right. So Sam, what on that list of tips to prevent after meal blood sugar spikes stuck out to you the most?
So we are huge, huge pre-bolusers. I mean, if we don't, we see like almost instantly that it was a mistake, especially because Amelia is a big Dunkin' Donuts fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how huge Dunkin' is in Florida, but it is everywhere here. And she is a glazed chocolate donut fiend. So typically it's like, oh, can we stop? And she takes like 8 units for 10 chocolate munchkins, which would be fine if she was taking it, you know, a half an hour before she ate. But oh my goodness, do we usually pay for that? I'm like, oh man, like, we made that mistake. But yeah, so we actually tried also because we kept on having that issue. So we tried to get the, how do you say it? The Fiasp? The
Fiasp?
Yeah. But they told us that my endocrinologist said that it's a non-preferred drug with our insurance plan. And but I didn't see like great success with it. So we're still no vlog girls forever.
Okay. I know. I have toyed around with the idea of trying Fiasp too because it's covered by our insurance. I don't know if my doctor would prescribe it, but it is covered.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't know. I've heard mixed reviews. Like it really doesn't work that much faster. And
yeah. Like not worth the change.
Right. I don't know. Maybe one day we'll give it a try, but we haven't yet.
Stay tuned.
And I just wanted to confirm that Dunkin' Donuts is a big deal here in Florida. And we actually, this was a tradition that started before diabetes, but I was like, we are not giving that up. I don't care about diabetes.
Right.
We're not giving it, but we
do. That's
yeah.
How I feel. Door-dashed this morning.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. But we, the last Friday of every month, so 12 times a year, we swing through Dunkin' and get a donut. So
12 times a year. So yeah, we definitely hit up Dunkin' much more than that.
I mean, I'm not going to say those are the only times we hit up Dunkin', but I'm just saying.
Those are the scheduled times.
Yes, those are the scheduled times. Yeah, but we have to give it. Sarah likes the strawberry frosted donut with sprinkles. And yeah, we ideally like a 20 or 30 minute pre-bolus is best for that. But for us, at least. But we don't. You can't always make that. That's, I mean, you know, because a lot of times we're swinging through Dunkin' after I pick him up from school. So she might only get like a 10 or 15 minute pre-bolus by the time we pull in the drive-thru.
Our thing is, with the way that a route to school is set up, I always say, she'll be like, when should I take my insulin? I'm like, take 8 units when you're by Burger King. She'll call me and be like, hey, I'm at Burger King. Should I take that insulin? But she's really 10 minutes away from Dunkin'.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. The things that we suggest.
I know. Right. Exactly. I don't know. It's nice that our kids are a little older, though, because they can, like,
I know,
do that on their own, sort of. I know. Thank God. All right. I'm going to quickly go through this next section. It is on. So that was, you know, a list of how to prevent the after meal spikes. And then this is like a tips on how to get food to digest more slowly, which could also help to prevent the after meal spikes. But he basically says you want to try to eat lower GI foods. Those are, you know, things that have a lot of fiber. And GI stands for glycemic index, if listeners don't know that. But table 9-4 in the book, in this chapter, provides ways to substitute high GI foods for low GI foods. So you might want to take a look at that. We just don't really do that. I mean, we try to eat healthy most of the time, but I'm not like spending all my days trying to figure out ways to substitute high GI foods for low GI foods. But that's just me.
Amen.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not know this. I think this is really interesting. Apparently, if you add some acidity to your food, like vinegar, it slows down the rate of digestion, like by a lot. So apparently this is why sourdough bread is much lower on the glycemic index than regular, like just regular white bread. And research has shown that adding acidity in the form of vinegar, so either just taking like a shot of vinegar straight or using a salad dressing that has vinegar, can reduce 1 hour post-meal blood sugar rise by as much as 50%. I'm like so tempted to have Sarah take a shot of apple cider vinegar after she eats breakfast cereal and see what happens.
I know. I wish I could get Amelia to do that. Maybe if I offer some Robux.
Yeah. Or pickles. Sarah loves pickles. Yeah.
Robux too.
Yeah. Maybe like, here, have some pickles with your toast.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I know. I could not. So I don't know. Fun fact. Did not know that. He suggests splitting your meal. So eat some up front, save some for later. Sequence properly. So eat your meals in a sequence, like try to eat your proteins and veggies first, and then save like the carbs for later in the meal. Use an add-on medication, Similan, which is also called pramlintide. That's the like hormone replacement for amylin, that hormone that I was talking about a little while ago. And then GLP-1 receptor agonists also slow down digestion. I'm not going to say anything else about those other than that, because that's probably beyond the scope of me. But he also says get moving, which was in the last section. But not only, you know, muscle activity, you know, it's kind of like free insulin, because you don't, when your muscles are exercising, they can take in glucose without insulin. But also when your muscles are exercising, it diverts blood flow away from your intestines and from digestion. So it slows down digestion. So good to keep in mind. And let's see. Oh, this was super interesting to me, because I think we were actually seeing this sometimes in the morning with Sarah. But apparently when you have a low blood sugar, one of the many responses that your body has includes accelerated gastric emptying, which means food digests and raises blood sugar even more quickly than usual following a low blood sugar. So that would be great for somebody that's having a low blood sugar, right? But when it occurs soon before eating a meal, it can contribute to excessive post-meal spikes. So in the mornings, especially with cereal, I was doing like a 30-minute pre-bolus for before Sarah would eat her cereal, but sometimes that would cause her to go low before she actually ate the cereal. And then we would see these really big spikes. And I was kind of attributing that to like a rebound high from like the adrenaline that's being dumped into her system. And then that's causing the high blood sugar. But I feel like it also might have been, you know, partly attributed to this, like the accelerated gastric emptying, which means like not only are we dealing with a rebound high and breakfast cereal, but now we're dealing with this like super fast digestion that's causing your blood sugar to go even higher. So then I start, and this has worked really well for us, but I'll give her like, I call it an appetizer. I'm like, here's your appetizer. And I'll give her like just a little tiny handful of cereal or like a couple grapes or just something that's going to like bump her up a tiny bit to keep her from crashing before she actually eats her breakfast.
Yeah.
So what on that list stuck out to you the most to when it comes to getting carbs to digest more slowly?
We're a huge on taking a walk. Like if we just ate and took a ton of insulin taking it, it wasn't on the list, but we take walks or I have her like hop right in the shower. Dinner can sometimes be hard for us, like right before bed and too much insulin lingering before she goes to sleep. So I'm like, get in the shower. So everything can blow along before you go to bed.
Oh, yeah. We use the shower in the bath all the time. That's like one of Sarah's favorite go-tos. I'm just going to get in the bath. Too. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay, see you later. We like prep up Amelia's iPad, give her a movie. We're like just sitting there for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. What if she dropped it? Is it waterproof?
The iPad? No. So we have this little stool. It's designated for the iPad. It's like this Amelia stool that we have in her room. We grab it. I'm like, grab your iPad stool. We're putting it by the tub.
Okay. She's not like holding it over the tub.
No. You have it like... I don't like paint the iPad, so definitely no.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, let's see. All right. Troubleshooting routine highs. We are kind of wrapping up the chapter here, but you know, sometimes you just high blood sugars just seem like unexplainable, right? Like you've tried to figure it out and you just can't. It's like your blood sugar's just high for seemingly no reason. The author does give a good review, however, of like things that can cause high blood sugars on pages 282 and 283. And then a lot of that was described in chapter 8. So if you know, I'm not going to list all those things here. So you can go back and listen to the chapter 8 episode or look through chapter 8 yourself. But then he does offer some questions to ask yourself when the highs truly seem to be unexplainable. So he says, ask yourself, is the insulin spoiled? I feel like that doesn't happen as much as people seem to make you want to think it happens. But Agreed. Okay, so... Yeah. So has the insulin gone bad? Maybe you forgot to take your insulin. Maybe you forgot to take your basal insulin or your bolus insulin. You know, that can happen. Is the insulin absorbing properly? So author gives some really great examples of how to, you know, properly rotate your injection sites and your pump sites to avoid like having those fatty deposits build up, which can prevent insulin from being absorbed. That's on page 286. And then he says, ask yourself, was there a gap in insulin coverage? Like maybe again, you didn't take your basal insulin kind of like at your scheduled time, or you forgot to take it all together, or maybe you suspended insulin. Like if you got in the pool and you were swimming, and so your basal insulin wasn't running for 2 hours. I know for Sarah, whenever I suspend her insulin before she gets in the pool, like as soon as she gets out of the pool, I have to turn her insulin back on and give her a bolus for what she missed. So like if she, like right now, her basal rate is right at like about a unit, a little higher than that, actually, which I think is really high for a 10-year-old girl, but whatever. So if she's in the pool for 2 hours and I've suspended her insulin, like when she gets out of the pool, I have to bolus for that. Like I have to give her 2 units of insulin right away, even if she's sitting at like 70, because I have seen pattern over and over again that she will immediately start to shoot up after she gets out of the pool. And then, really?
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of weird, honestly.
Yeah, I know. And then the last question is, has your pump failed or malfunctioned? That can obviously cause gaps in your insulin coverage and can cause your blood sugar to go really high. Do you have any kind of like anecdotal advice or stories concerning any of those questions?
For us, we're big on like, I do agree, like take your basal when you like, if you are MDI, definitely taking it. Like for me, I take it when I like first wake up. So I have thyroid medicine that I take that with my thymus in the morning. But for anyone else, I mean, I know they typically suggest that you take it at night. So maybe taking it like they say, like when you brush your teeth or like prepare something, like always make sure you do it in a routine, because that's something so easy to forget advice wise for that. But pump failures, oh gosh, that's like something huge for us, because I do feel like, I don't know if it's just how rough she is, because we have so many pod failures. I don't even know really what to say. A lot of the times for us, that's what it is. The pods failed. Like it either came the adhesive peeled off or we have that a lot.
Yeah. We have only, I feel like we've only really had like maybe 3 or maybe 4 pod failures, like true pod failures, or like truly like the cannula came out and I didn't realize it, or the cannula is totally bent and I didn't realize it. But other than that, I've realized that most of our high blood sugars are just user error.
Like, oh my gosh. I know you love that when you're like, oh, this pod definitely failed. And then they're like tanking 60 double errors down. And you're like, that'll take it.
Yeah.
It's your body. It's not the pod.
Yes. Or it was my poor treatment decision or whatever the case may be. Like I do like to blame the pod sometimes, even though it's usually not the pod. It's usually me or something else.
Know. I'm like, God dang these pods. In reality, I like gave her way too much influence for that, but whatever.
Right. Right. But I mean, the author kind of ends the chapter with like, if you are off of your insulin for whatever reason, whether you've suspended it because you've gotten in the pool or whatever the case may be, or your pump has failed, like you really need to get some insulin in the system as quickly as possible, because it's crazy, but you DKA can really start to happen within like hours of not having your insulin, which is insane to me. We actually saw this a couple weeks ago when we were in Arizona and Sarah got so sick, like just insane. But, you know, DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis, is when basically your body doesn't have access to insulin. And if it doesn't have access to insulin, it can't use glucose for fuel. So it has to start breaking down all the fat. And when fat gets broken down to be used for energy, it gives off all these byproducts, which are ketones. And ketones are very acidic. So it can really mess with the pH balance of your blood, and it can turn it like really, really acidic really quickly. And then when it gets too high, your body just cannot get rid of it fast enough. Like you just can't flush it out of your system. So, you know, the author says he gives three steps to reversing the problem if ketones are present. So not if you're in DKA, like if you suspect that your child is in, or you are in DKA, which the signs for that are nausea and vomiting, breathing maybe very deep or irregular, fruity odor on the breath, dry skin, dehydrated from excessive urination, intense thirst, dry mouth, blurry vision, headache, and muscle aches and pains. Like if there's ketones and you suspect DKA, you just need to go straight to the hospital. Like don't even try to mess around with that. But if there's, you know, if it's early on and the ketones are present and they're like not causing any of those big symptoms, like he gives three steps to try to reverse it. He says, inject rapid acting insulin, consider doing it into a muscle to get the insulin moving quicker, drink tons and tons of water to try to flush out the ketones. And then if you're on a pump, you want to change the cartridge, the tubing, the infusion set, or the pod if you're on Omnipod, and then use a fresh vial of insulin to try to get those ketones out of there. Because failure to correct could, like I already said, put you into DKA pretty quickly. And this is a interesting fact. More than 80% of type 1 diabetic inpatient hospital admissions are due to DKA each year. So if diabetics are going to the hospital, type 1 diabetics, it's usually because they're in DKA. So have you ever been, I mean, other than at diagnosis, have you ever been in DKA or your daughter ever been in DKA?
Only once when I had flu. I was probably in high school and my mom was like, okay, like your blood sugar's been high for like two whole days. Like we should probably go to the hospital. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to run upstairs really quick and brush my teeth. Well, I guess I passed out. My sister tells me I took 20 years off of her life all the time. She bet you went upstairs this time and I passed out. I don't remember it happening, of course, but they ended up like dragging me down the hallway and I woke up in the ICU.
Oh my gosh.
It's funny to us now because they just get so, they're so, like, if anyone tries to trivialize diabetes, they, my sisters go hard and they're like, okay, well, you've never drug your sister down a flight of stairs and take her to the hospital. You obviously don't understand. Like, I put them through it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wait, sorry. So you were in high school. So were you like going through a phase of just wanting to ignore your diabetes or what happened?
100%. When I first got to high school, I went from a private school to a public school. And I was on, I had the Medtronic pump, and a kid who I'm like friends with now, but I was a freshman, was like, are you wearing plastic underwear? Because my pump tubing was sticking out of my pants. Well, that was all I needed to not want to wear my pump to school. And oh, yeah.
I hate
Did myself dirty, so, and my sister. So now they're all like, if I take a long nap, if I look grouchy, if I'm tired, they're like, what's your sugar? Are you okay? I'm like, oh my God, you guys. That was like 17 years ago.
Oh, but isn't it? It's a little bit of that is sweet, right? That they're so concerned about you. I know. You scared them to death. That's what you traumatized them.
I did. They feel like they're going to die young. We're just worried about diabetes and they're not diabetic.
I know. I feel like I need to have you back on sometime to just talk about that whole teen phase of you wanting to ignore your diabetes. Cause I feel like that's like a lot of parents' fear is like,
it happens.
Their kids. Yeah, I know it does. I'm just like,
kids are mean, right? Like they just like say the wrong thing, and then that just like totally changes your perception of yourself, really.
Yeah, I know. And in middle school and high school, it, like you said, it only takes one thing to set you off.
Yep.
And
yeah,
okay, I'm gonna start praying now.
I know. My daughter, her and girls just want to have fun for the first time a couple months ago. I was like, Mom, this is going to be me. I swear to God, I had an instant panic attack. I was sweaty. I'm like, oh my God, like, I can't hear this. I cannot think that. Please don't want to have fun. I need you to like stay home and just live with me forever.
I know, right? There will be no partying and drinking for you in college. Not absolutely.
No girls having fun whatsoever.
Girls just want to have low carb snacks and take their insulin. That's what the song should say.
Girls just want to sit really calmly next to their mom until they're 80.
Oh, I would love, actually, I would not love that. Let's be honest. I'm like, when can y'all get out of this house? But I just can't think about it.
He's like, Sam, she'll be fine if she goes away for the day. Let's go on a date. And there we are, checking the Dexcom every 5 minutes, waiting for the 4 to hit 5. I'm like, oh, God, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I hear you. I know. All right. Well, Sam, thank you. I know that was a longer recording, and I just really thank you for your time. And I loved hearing all of your little stories and your tips and tricks. I just feel like you have like double the amount of insight and wisdom since you've lived with this for so long. And now you have a child with diabetes, and I feel like you had a lot to offer. So thank you.
You are so welcome. And it's so nice to be on. It's honestly so nice to like, I feel like a lot of people would do so much better, like just talking to someone who's going through the same thing. Like it's lonely when you don't have that kind of someone that understands, because no one does. Unless you're doing exactly what they're doing, they don't get it.
I know. I agree.
It's a bummer.
I know. That's why I've tried to surround myself with, I've like forced people to be friends with me. I'm like, oh, your kid has diabetes? You will be friends with me.
We're like, oh my God, I saw you. We had so many times we've like walked up to people and been like, oh my God, I saw your Dexcom. Oh my God, I saw your Omnipod. And majority of the time they look at us like, go. Like, I do not want to be your friend. Because we're like in Disney or on the beach, you know, like whatever. And we're like, okay, bye. Like, I just never saw a diabetic in the wild and wanted to be your friend, but it's fine. That's probably okay.
I know. Bye. You don't want to exchange numbers? No? Okay. No. All right.
You want to be my friend forever? Okay. All right. That's fine.
All right. See ya. Oh, I know. I feel like I get most of the time, those are the looks I get too. There was this one time I was sitting I was watching my son's baseball game and Sarah was sitting on my lap. And this, like, she must have been, I don't know, 30, maybe mid 30s. She, like, grown woman comes up to me and like flexes her arm in front of my face. And she had a Dexcom on her arm. Oh, and I was like, it like took me a second because like my eyes had to focus because it was that close to my face. And I was like, oh, and I like turned around and she's like, I just wanted to come say hi. I'm a fellow diabetic. And I was like,
oh. I would have loved her.
See, I did love her. Like after the initial shock wore off, I was like, yeah. I'd like to be your best friend. But anyway, she had to go because she had to go home or something like that. But
I want you to come home with me for dinner, but it was nice to meet you.
Right. Right. So I thought that was fun. I like when people do weird, crazy stuff like that. Like, be weird, be awkward. I appreciate it.
It comes with working in healthcare, I think. Are you a physical therapist?
Yes, physical therapist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So patients like make you want to be weird and you just accept it for what it is.
Oh, patients are so weird. Like, have you ever had a normal patient? I don't think I ever have.
Never. And I love them. I love the weird ones.
I know. I do too. Like, the weirder they are. No, listen, I don't like the mean ones. I hate the mean ones. Those are so bad. But the weird ones, I'm like, I'm here for you.
Come over here to me and snuggle me. I know exactly how I feel. I'm like, give me these weirdos. I love them.
I know, which is why I think I'm going to do really well when my kids are middle schoolers, because middle schoolers are just so weird and awkward. But I think I'm ready.
My daughter's friends think I'm like so funny and she thinks I'm the biggest loser. She's like, Mom, come on. I'm like, come on.
I love it.
Let's be something weird. And she's like, no. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Whatever.
Fine. They'll appreciate it when they're older. They can look back. And,
yeah.
It was pretty cool, I guess.
Okay. You were a little funny.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to let you go. But hey, listen, when I hit stop, don't like give it like 30 seconds because it needs to upload real quick. Okay.
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 All right, guys, that is it for the show today. I have a few updates. First of all, I would like you all to know that both Samantha and I are now using the Omnipod 5 automated insulin delivery system, and Samantha has braved the automated mode and she is loving it. She wants everybody to know that she's now using auto mode most of the time, and they're absolutely loving it. And that is the same for us. I have only flipped it into manual mode once or twice to do a bigger extended bolus for a heavier meal. And other than that, it's been an automatic mode or auto mode, automated mode. That's what it's called. And we are absolutely loving it. I mean, our control has been, I would say, a great deal better than it was before. Our standard deviation has gone down, and I'm excited to go to our next endo appointment and see what our A1C is. Also, probably more importantly than A1C, our time in range has been pretty darn good. I would say it's been over 70%, usually closer to like 80, 85% on most days. So that's pretty awesome in my opinion. I also want to let you know that I just put Tropical Punch Kool-Aid on my Walmart order for my next Walmart pickup. And I was laughing when I listened to that part of the show when I was editing it, and I thought, oh, I forgot about that. I got to add it to my next grocery pickup. So I did that, and I will let you know how it goes. It made me sad to talk about the Red Lily emergency glucagon kits, because just recently we learned in the diabetes news world that those kits are going to be discontinued soon, so they will no longer be available. I think it's just because there's so many like auto injectors now, like the Gvoke Hypo Pen and the Baqsimi nasal spray, that those Lily, Red Lily, old school glucagon kits just don't get used as much. Let's see, last update. Samantha mentioned being a huge pre-bolus family. We are also a huge pre-bolus family. Our control is so much better, so much better when we pre-bolus. Typically in the mornings for us, for breakfast, it's a 30-minute pre-bolus. And other meals of the day, it's more like a 15 or 20 minute pre-bolus. And then we've become really good at learning which meals we do not pre-bolus for. And I know everybody's different, so I'm not telling you what to do, I'm just telling you what works for us. But we recently learned that barbecue ribs, is another meal that we cannot pre-bolus for, because Sarah goes crazy low before those ribs digest and the carbs that she had with her meal have a chance to get into her blood sugar and get into her system. So, ribs, no pre-bolus for us. Also see pizza and fettuccine Alfredo. Okay, I mentioned several episodes in this episode. I mentioned the episode about reading the Dexcom dots and not the arrows. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I mentioned the episode about alcohol and diabetes. I will put a link to that one in the show notes as well. And then I mentioned the episode about the Medtronic N-Pen, which is the smart insulin pen that has Bluetooth technology built into it. I will also put a link to that in the show notes, as well as a link to where you can buy your very own copy of Think Like a Pancreas and follow along with us. All right, guys, I hope you have a fabulous week. I will chat with you soon, but until then, stay calm and bolus on. Bye.